Today on The Grave Talks, Haunted Antiques. Take a look around you. The vintage item movement is big business. And not just reproduction items either. Legitimate items, heirlooms, furniture, jewelry, clothing, you name it. If it once belonged to the living and is still in relatively usable shape, someone is going to try and sell it. This is the business of selling dead people's things. And if you look at it closely, you may discover some of those things are in fact haunted. Haunted antiques that have a life and sometimes personality of their own. How haunted are these items? That very much depends on what it is we're talking about and what the haunted antique was used for. When one owns a haunted antique, does the former owner come with it? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. According to author Duane Scott Kearney, who we talked to on this topic, it seems haunted antiques are more of a vehicle for repeated energy than they are for a conscious energy or soul. This means that a specific event or action may be repeated visually or audibly around the object in question. It seems to be very rare that Great Aunt Edna will break free from her brooch collection to share insight on a better way to make her prized casserole recipe. You're much more likely to be plagued by the scent of the tuna casserole than you are by her uncharming personality. But are these antiques safe? It all depends how comfortable you are with unexplained activity occurring around you and your loved ones. When it comes to the paranormal, it seems anything is possible. The real question is, do you like ghosts? Are you okay with unexplained activity in your home? If you answered yes, then acquiring a collection of these objects may be right up your alley. If not, then you may want to stick with a reproduction variety of vintage decor.
I would say I was, like many people, quite a bit of a skeptic. I really hadn't had any experiences in it, didn't have much of an opinion. Though fairly early on when I got into the business, this is a business of endings. The antique business is a business of endings. It's always divorce, downsizing, and death, the three D's. So that, and the latter is always there. Over the years, even from the beginning, I was just exposed to a lot of that. But very early on, a friend of mine who I had gone to college with called me and said that his father had passed. And I was very close to this family, or their Jewish family, and they were almost kind of like a second family to me, and I'm Catholic and know much about that. But his dad was great. So his name was Myron. We were both Pisces, and that I do kind of believe in. And he had a great sense of humor and a great spirit, but he truly suffered Job-like. He had diabetes, and it was, first he lost a leg, then he lost another leg, then he went blind. I mean, the guy was just, but he was such a sweet soul. Anyway, his son says, we're going to have a Shiva at the house, and we'd like you to come. And he says, but there's like a bit of a twist. And I said, well, whatever I can do, And he goes, well, we're going to be needing to downsize Mom. She can't be in this big apartment anymore. It's just the finances of it. So while you're there, just kind of like check out stuff. And initially I said, I'm not really comfortable doing that. It's basically doing an appraisal at a Shiva. that just didn't set right. And he goes, just be subtle about it. Nobody has to know. Just check out this. Now, I kind of embraced it because I'd known them for so many years. And they were a very artistic family. They would go to a lot of kind of outsider art fairs in the 60s and 70s. And they had a good eye. They would buy really cool things. So in that, I was like going, this could be interesting. I get there, and it was a sad occasion, but it was he was a really cool guy, and people were just telling all the stories about his life. And there was all this food. Oh, my gosh, the food. You know, and again, being Catholic, when somebody died, you know, usually you go to a restaurant, and it was always about, you know, how popular the relative was depended on the quality of the restaurant, you know. But this being in someone's home, I was, you know, a little bit, you know, taken back. But anyway, this is going on, and I'm just, like, slowly wandering around the apartment, looking at things. Occasionally, I'd pick up a vase and look for a signature on the bottom, and I tried to be discreet about it. And while this is going on, all of a sudden, there's this scream, and it sounded like his mother, but I didn't know where his mother was, you know, at the time. And my friend went running off, going like, "I think that was mom," you know, and he goes running off into a bedroom. I'm standing there with a plate of Kugel in my hands, you know, not knowing what to do. And everybody goes, you know, dead silent. Everybody's like freaking out. What is she screaming about? Well, she screams again. And then my friend comes, opens up the door and says, "Get in here, get in here." And I go into the bedroom. Now, the bedroom, everyone who was attending the Shiva had gone, of course, and put their coats and bags and hats on top of the bed. But when I walked in the room, and there were easily 50 people there, when I got there, all that stuff is all over the floor. Everything. Purses and jackets and contents of purses and coats. Everything's, it was as if like a wind came through and had blown it all off the bed. And she's standing there, and she says, "It's him. He's been doing this all day," which just, again, meant, like, nothing to me. And my friend said, "Oh, you know, my mother, she's so overcome with grief. Yeah, she probably did this." And his mother is saying, "No, no, you guys don't get it. You guys don't get it. He did this." So we just start putting all this stuff back on the onto the bed. Because we're really concerned about, you know, how would it look for these people who are mourners coming to somebody's house, and then we're all rifling through their possessions. So immediately my own Catholic guilt is, you know, jumping in. And put everything back in place, and then she goes and runs into the bathroom, and she was crying. And my friend said he was going to go back to the into the living room. And while I'm standing there, the TV goes on. Just by itself, just goes on. And it was just this static, you know, between channels. I didn't know what to make of that either. But that was odd. And his mother comes out of the bathroom and again starts with that, with the, "He's been doing that all day as well." She goes, "The TV just goes on and off, on and off, on and off." Well, I thought, well, I can fix this, you know. I'm trying to be the helpful guy here. So I unplugged the TV. That'll take care of it, right? I go and use the bathroom. She goes back into the rest of the apartment. I come out, and that freaking TV is back on. The cord is, I can still see this. I can see the cord, like, laying on the carpeting, that pea green carpeting, not connected to the wall, no juice, poltergeist worthy, crap your pants. What the hell is this about? So that was my first experience, and I would say most vivid experience, of something completely inexplicable.
Prior to getting into this industry and working with antiques and having some experiences, did you believe in ghosts? Did you think that this was a thing, or was it just, you know, something explained away that other people have happened to them, but it's all in their minds?
I believe that. You'd hear so many other people's stories, and depending who told you, who's somebody that I believed or trusted, perhaps a teacher or a really good friend, I'd go like, well, you know, that's a possibility. But overall, if I didn't know somebody, I wasn't buying it. And do kind of have an update to this, because after I wrote the book, and there's a chapter in the book called Still Sitting Shiva, I contacted my friend and I said, "Yeah, I want you to know I've written this, and I certainly wouldn't publish it without your permission, and I want, you know, your feedback." And Obviously, we still stay in touch, but we've never talked about this since. And this is a number of years ago. I mean, we were both in our 20s. And he calls me up, and he's crying. And I was like, oh, gosh, like, what did I do? Did I cross a line here? And he said, wow, you really captured my parents. I can hear their voice in your story. You brought me back to that. And I said, oh, I'm really touched by that. But, you know, what about the event itself, as you recall? And he said, no, that's how I remember it as well. And he says, but I really tried to not think about it over the years. Most of what he told me was that during the 3 days there was a lot of that. I left that night. I was, where's my coat? You know, I'm gone. and afterwards, it was pretty done. It pretty much done with that. And then she did move out of the apartment. I think it said a lot about him. So, I don't think he was trying to scare us. I think he was trying to get our attention. He was a bit of a prankster. So I'd say, whereas I didn't believe it prior, given the fact who he was and how it happened, that made me a believer.
So how did you get into the antique business, and how did you start collecting and becoming part of that world?
Okay. So even when I was a little kid, I used to go around the neighborhood, and I'd ask the neighbor kids, or even kids I didn't know, if they had toys that they didn't want to play with, and that I would consign things for them. And so I went around with a little wagon and picked up all this stuff. So basically, you know, it was like a resale store for unwanted toys, and I set it up on my parents' front porch, which they did not appreciate. And I talk about this in the book as well, you know, selling dead people's things. But is that, so I called it the porch store, right? But, and kids would come by, and I would just exchange things, or sometimes I made a little money. It was way better than, you know, mowing the lawn or delivering newspapers. but people would drive by and see this sign that said the porch store. You know, they would ask if I, you know, knew anybody who did aluminum siding, or, you know, could I recommend a good plumber? You know, it's just, so like wrong graphics. So my marketing skills weren't very well honed. I did that, you know, as a kid in high school. My dad worked for a division of Playboy, but in the production side of it, and he would come home with. Proof photographic prints of some of the models, which my mother was not happy about ever. And he was so proud of, like, he did color correction. He was a photo engraver, which is a bit of a lost art now, but computers. But back then, you needed to have somebody who knew how to do that, and it was truly an art. One day he brought home a whole bunch of, usually they just hit the garbage. My mother was just, you know, he had to throw these things out. Don't tell the neighbors. It was that. No one should know. We're living off the softcore profits of smut, you know. And now it seems so tame and ridiculous, but you know, it's the 60s. So 70s. So one day he brings home this huge pile of models, these photographic proof sheets, of course the garbage. They're in the garbage the next night. Well, I dug them out. And I'm in high school at this point, and I thought, I've got an idea here. So I started selling them in out of my locker in high school. And I'm like a sophomore. I'm 5 feet, barely 5 feet tall, barely 100 pounds. I'm the kid everybody beats up, one of them, right? But it made me cool though. And I had never really thought about that. So, like, the bullies would be like, well, before we smack him, does he have any new photographs of naked girls? again, chapter in the book. It's always been there. Always, you know, same thing in college. I had little side businesses. I mean, I could go on and on about this, but that's how I got started.
Tell me about the first time you had something happen with an object. something from a dead person, essentially, that made you raise your eyebrows, that made you go, okay, I think there might be something going on here with this, more than just a weird feeling. What was that object and what happened?
Well, you know, there's kind of a pattern here, which antique dealers sometimes talk about, but I don't hear it spoken about much. And, you know, this can be either from a high-end hoarder or a low-end hoarder, because it's still hoarding. And when there's a clean-out, and what's funny is, just kind of answer your question in parallel, an incident happened recently, in the last month, which freaked me out because it reminded me of an earlier thing that had happened. And we'll start with that. So I got into a hoarder house, and I mean, this is a hoarder house. This is, you are standing on piles of trash to look around at things. You're like practically in a hazmat suit. You know, you get little gloves and a mask and a bag, and you're going through it. It's really kind of all, and the smell is terrible. But you know, you always want to go because you never know what you're going to find, and it's probably going to be cheap. And every once in a while, you find something really cool, and or if nothing else, a story. Anyway, so working with the guy who's cleaning out this house, and they get this thing cleaned down to the floors. This is immaculate. It's amazing what people can do. It's a whole crew comes in, so everything is taken. Yeah, remember this is like the place is just, I don't say gutted, the walls are still there, but all the garbage is out, everything's swept and washed and cleaned, and there are no possessions left in the house. Because what happens then it goes to the realtor. There's a system here for these things, you know. If the house is salvageable, you know, of course it's going to go to a realtor. So it was one of these. So I was there, and I'd seen the house the first time with all the stuff in it, and I didn't get much out of it. And the guys doing the clean out had said, well, you want to come back with me and do the walkthrough. And I thought, well, this is going to be kind of boring because we're just going to be looking at empty rooms. But it was a cool house, and I really love architecture. And it's kind of fun to see the before and the after in some of these things. You know, like, wow, the floor is amazing. The architectural details are suddenly there because you couldn't see them before. So going through the house, and again, this is swept, broom cleaned, nothing will be there flat out. And we get down this long hallway to this like third bedroom off to the side. And in the middle of the room on the floor is sitting a book. Now, both of us were like, how can that be? And this is kind of, again, I've talked to other people about this, and this is a quote unquote thing that oftentimes some object just appears and it has some significance. One might not understand what it is, but it's a significant certainly to the spirit or ghost or entity or whatever that wants you to see that. There's a reason for that thing to be there. In this instance, it was a Bible, which I'm getting goosebumps telling you about. So that was the... it was interesting too because, again, being there, experiencing something with someone else, I think, really magnifies the experience. You can kind of mistrust your own feelings. Did this happen? Did it not happen? When you're there with somebody else, it just validates it in a way, like nothing else. It's a what the F, you know. The incident that just happened, and it was in a condo in a high rise, so kind of you think like an unlikely place, but these things can happen anywhere. Not a hoarder house, but a clean out again, and a remodel. They put down floors and carpeting, da, 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 da. And I did the walkthrough with the realtor because I'd been there earlier, and the realtor reaches into a closet and he goes, what is this doing here? And it was a picture, this large, like 8.5 by 11 picture of the person who had lived there. And he was like, the floors had even been replaced. So where is this thing? I'd gone through the whole place before, and then I'd seen everything leave. and I did done the walkthrough, so I knew it. That's what we're supposed to do, you know, help move all these things along. There's not anything supposed to be left there. But it was a picture of the deceased. And to me, that was, I'm still here. This is my place. I'm leaving my mark on this. And someone that I did know, and I kind of, again, I wasn't surprised with that. And again, this happened just a couple weeks ago. But it flashed me back to this incident of wow, probably 20 years earlier. But in between, I've talked to other dealers, and they said, yeah, that's happened to me. Where it's just one thing. And it's often something small, and you could say, well, you know, they overlooked it or whatever. But, you know, we're not talking about upside down crucifixes or anything like that. You know, this I think part of the reason my book resonates is because these are real. These are honest experiences. I don't have explanations for them. I can give you my impression of why. But this is just, you know, this is just what happened to me. but since now, any number of people are coming forward going, oh, that. Like, that's a thing. That's a thing.
How common is discussion of haunted objects within the antique community? Because it's one of those things I've talked about on the shows over the years where you would think, if you were to guess what place has a lot of ghosts in it, I always think an antique store. But it's very rare that we ever see or hear about haunted antique stores, at least publicly acknowledged or publicly spoken about, at the least. Is it an accepted thing? Is it just kind of a hush-hush? We all know this is going on. How is that received and perceived in the antique world?
Exactly. How do I put this? Yeah, in the business, everybody's got a story. Everybody has an experience. I think antique dealers tend to believe in this a lot more, just because they're so connected to these transition situations. But you know, think about it on a retail end. Just a couple different answers here. On a retail end, you know, if you, and we could talk about my store later. It's something retailers don't necessarily talk about, because not all customers are cool with that. I recall one time a girl came in and she was gonna buy this sweater, and she's holding it there, and then she says, well, where did it come from? And I had said, well, it was, you know, at an estate sale. And she goes, an estate sale? You mean like this is a dead woman's sweater? And I said, well yeah, but we had it dry cleaned. And the girl passed out cold right there when I said the words. So not everybody's cool about this. Now, other people, yep, think it's great, think it's fascinating, they think it's sexy, whatever. I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you're not going to have that experience from something you bought at IKEA, you know, let's put it that way. I doubt it anyway. So in the industry, though, yeah, there's talk about it, but it's and I'll probably get some blowback on this, but it's not something anyone really like publicizes, because it makes people uncomfortable, and that doesn't close a sale.
Having seen thousands of items come and go over the years, are there any specific ones, any specific type of item that you would say have a higher chance, a higher percentage chance of having something attached to it than another?
Well, I will call out, you know, again, people pissed at me about this. You know, eBay for a long time went through this whole thing with like haunted dolls and people getting huge money for haunted. Suddenly every Barbie suddenly looks like she could, you know, yeah, she's back from the dead. And I'm not saying that there could absolutely be that. I don't know anyone who's had a haunted doll legitimately that I believed. I think a lot of these things are, you know, it could be, my point is always, why isn't it a haunted toaster? You know, yeah, I really need to move this thing. Let me tell you, this thing goes off in the middle of the night, whether you want toast or not. You know, that I find kind of ludicrous. But my answer to that is, and I kind of go back to that earlier story, that Bible. Books, I hear this about. And if you think about it, something that you, particularly a Bible, that someone has read perhaps over their whole life, maybe many times, there's a connection with reading, experiencing it, owning that Bible. That's very unlike, let's just say, you know, you have a favorite paperweight that you pick up every once in a while, look at it, and dust it off and put it to the side. You know, somebody gave it to you, you have a sentimental attraction to it. Maybe somebody gave you something and that person isn't with you anymore. I think often these are like energies that are put out there by perhaps people who, you know, are no longer with us. I think some people have that kind of influence on objects. But so I think there has to be some kind of a bonding. You always see, probably the most classic thing is like the rocking chairs, right? There's always some, the rocker in the attic that suddenly, but in a way that kind of makes sense because that's something someone spent a lot of time sitting in. I've heard of haunted beds. You see a lot of videos of things with that. It's people spend time with an object or a piece of furniture. Those things I feel have more credibility than, again, you know, it's that I've got so much trouble with that waffle iron you gave me. You know, it just seems logical to me that that's why it would be these things that were really a part of your life.
A real common one that I hear on the show are mirrors.
Mirrors, yeah. Well, look at even with not that it happened there, but looking at a Shiva, you know, what do Jewish people do? They cover the mirrors. I always say it's, you know, so people like me can't go looking for the manufacturer's tag on it. But mirrors. I've heard a number of stories about mirrors. I've had customers make references to seeing things in mirrors. I have not. Again, I'm always just being honest about this. Well, I have had a number of experiences or been connected to them, but not. Yeah, I did have a pretty strange one with a desk, but again, I think it's that kind of the amount of time someone spent with the object kind of made an impression on it, and that I always view it as kind of like, you know, it's like an old 78, and it just keeps playing it over and over. You know, that's there's some kind of cosmic or psychic impression that's made on the object, and it just replays it, you know, like a video.
You know, a very common thing that we talk about in the ghost world is this a conscious entity? Is this a residual entity? Is this neither? Is this some sort of conscious thing that was never walking the earth? When it comes to antiques, what would you say is more common? I'm gathering from some of your stories here that they seem to be, and correct me if I'm wrong, fairly residual. Not so much that Aunt Edna is still connected to the crock pot and is going to pop out and give you cooking tips and watch over you and guide your hand to make the ultimate casserole, but more so you're going to maybe smell her perfume or smell the tuna casserole when you never made the tuna casserole because of the residual energy connected to said object.
I think it's more of a residual thing. It's especially when like an object is just kind of showing up, like pay attention to me or, you know, people talk about like a book that keeps falling off the shelf. Well, why is it that book? It's always that book. It is. I think it's more as if it's been kind of energized. I'll just tell you a little side story. And I think this kind of speaks to it. So I have a friend who really doesn't particularly believe in this, and he's very sweet, former seminary student, rather a religious person, a social worker, really just a great guy. Everybody loves him. Now, if I take him to, like, say, an antique show, and I've seen him do this countless times, and this comes from a certain purity of soul, that he can approach an item, something just kind of speaks to him, and he has to like touch this. Going, this is beautiful. I love this. This is wonderful. Not about money. Again, if I can emphasize anything, that's one theme I have in the book is if you can get around the money thing, that money thing muddles people's thinking. It really, I know it's important, but put that aside. So he's not looking at something that's like for value, and he touches it, and he sets it down. And minutes later, somebody else will come along and pick it up and very often buy it. And again, I've seen him do it countless times. Now, I joke with him saying, like, hey, come into my booth and start touching things, right? Doesn't work that way. And he'll even say, nah, you know, I wouldn't do that. And he goes, no, it's just something. He's drawn to objects. I think it's that. I think the living absolutely can do that. Almost he's kind of like an influencer, right? There's some energy in the object, and it's like a magnetism between the living and something that's still residing in that object. I have seen him do this dozens of times. Other people have as well. And like he always says, he wishes he could monetize it. But that's kind of the point, that when it's not about the value of making money on something, you got to throw all that out the window. This is a different subject. Humans mess that up with money. I always say, to the object, we mean nothing. Money means nothing. I know that sounds kind of goofy, but I always say, you know, put yourself in the shoes of a pair of shoes. Put yourself in the shoes of an object. They're the permanent for the most part. We're the temporary. We'll be gone. This thing has had owners and owners and owners over the years. It might be looking out for just the next place it's going to be residing. So, and again, I don't necessarily, like you're saying, that it's so much a ghost per se, in that it's just some like residual energy that wants to just go on.
Having done this for so long, can you personally, when an object comes your way, sense there's something attached to it before any event occurs around it that really shows you, oh, there is something attached to this? Is that something you can pick up on?
In all honesty, no. I think I'm very empathic. I'm a good listener, and I pay attention to why I'm there, who's brought me there, what I should say, what I shouldn't say. And I don't want to gloss over this, because sometimes these are very emotional situations. I ended in places where somebody had died, 24 hours earlier. But because of circumstances, these things have to go. There's leases control people's lives more than anything else, unfortunately, and finances and that. So I really don't. I think I'm perhaps sensitive, but I think I'm more sensitive to the people. And I think that when these situations arise, I'm supposed to be there. I often think I'm the guy who needed to be here. This is who they needed today, and I'm good at that. Being honest, I'm good at that. That's a tough spot. I've had a lot of loss in my life. I'm sure others have as well. I'm good at that. And if that's the one thing I can do that makes it easier for people. And especially when, going back to that, when money is involved, going like, just to make it as easy as possible. This should not, they got enough problems. But I would say that it's only been after we have the object, and now it's, in the store. And there's been a couple of those, but I can't say that, like, when I picked it up, oh, I knew, that desk was going to be trouble. This was one of the stories. No. Had a desk. A guy actually just came in the store and says, I've got this desk I need to sell. And it was a small partner's desk. If your listeners know what a partner's desk is, partners can sit on either side. There's all these little drawers on both sides. Generally, there's a center drawer that you can slide documents in the drawer to the other person, that main drawer, which is kind of cool. So it's a turn of the century partner's desk. Generally, I don't even deal in things that old, but at that time I was doing arts and crafts and Victorian kind of fit. Now it's all mid-century modern and Mad Men. And somebody actually is annoyed with me that I don't have a story about a haunted Eames chair, which I think is funny, but I don't. anyway, they're making requests, which is just annoying. So the desk, this guy says, I really want to sell this desk, and it was cheap. It might have been $100. But this guy really wants to unload this desk. And what was crazy about it was, so on the bottom of every drawer were all these symbols, and it kind of looked like hieroglyphs or memes or like kind of an old English scrawl, and it was all burnt into the wood with beautiful handwriting, but it didn't make any sense at all. And it's as if there was a whole story being told on the bottom of all these drawers. I don't know what that's about. That's just how it came in. So I kind of chalked it up as to like, well, this is kind of a, almost somebody did make a, it's an early like kind of folk art impression on this thing. Right. And I sold the desk rather quickly and it came back. generally, we don't take things back, but this person was very unhappy and it was just, I don't want it. This isn't working out. You need to take it back. And I was fairly new. It was my first store. I didn't want before Yelp. Didn't need any bad reviews. I said, sure, I'll take it back. It's a great desk. Somebody else will want it. But that happened over and over. I kept selling this desk and it kept coming back. And as it came back, and then I got into, well, what's up with this? And then people would just say, very uncomfortable about it, well, there's problems with it. You know. Finally, a woman bought it, and she had very sweet, and she had said this was just like the desk, very similar to the desk that her grandmother had had. And so that's why she wanted it. And she and her sister used to play, tea house in this thing. And they put all their little Occupied Japan tea sets in the drawers. You know, she had a purpose for it. Her husband was less than thrilled that she was buying it. I remember that. And it goes. About a week later, she calls me. Like, what do I know about the desk? What am I going to tell her? Everybody who buys it returns it? You know, that's not going to work. And I said, so let me guess, you want to bring it back. Let's cut to the chase. I'm busy, right? And she goes, no. She says, it's just that, she goes, you know, the drawers don't stay closed. And I said, well, you know, that could be the glides. She goes, no. You know, my husband's looked at that. So I went and I asked this. Kind of funny that I didn't know this, but I didn't know this. So I had two guys who had been working for me all this time, and I had seen the desk come and go. They'd been on, you know, bring it back downstairs, bring it back upstairs, right? And on this, so this woman's talking about, like, you know, she's having issues with the desk. So I said to the guys, did you notice anything with the desk when it was here? And they just look at one another. What's funny is these guys did not get along at all. Not friends. They say to me, well, you know, there is a thing about those kind of balls of light that come out of the drawers. What the? What? Right? Now, again, these would have been in the basement. In the basement, there's no windows. There's no natural light, you know, whatsoever. There's just fluorescence. Right? And I go, what are you talking about? And they said, well, like the second or third time that desk came back, we noticed the drawers were open and these little balls of light would kind of fly around the room. Oh, you didn't mention this? You know, and then they were like, well, first off, again, they didn't like one another. So it was like that. They just agreed. They're not going to talk about this. Well, that's then what she started to see. It freaked her out a little, but it was kind of cute because she kind of felt like that this had been the desk she'd been looking for so long. That was just part of the experience. And her husband again wasn't as thrilled about it, keeping it. And she even said, you know, what am I going to do, call you and not bring something back? You know, what am I complaining about? There's a number of conversations we had, which was pretty funny. And then I did say, well, you know, I since realized that I guess we did have problems with this, but, you know, we sell a lot of stuff. I can't be on top of everything. So I looked at this as more like really like kind of a business problem. But that's on any number of people having experiences with the same item.
Have you ever been in a situation where you're able to essentially connect some dots and do a full 360 on an object, figuring out whose it was, now why the energy is there, or whose energy this may have been that's connected to it, and really kind of get a full spectrum story on what's going on with the object?
No, I really don't. And I certainly don't want people to think, like, because it's a book, there's like probably four or five chapters that delve into this. And that really wasn't my intention. I was trying to tell some of the best stories of my 30 years of doing this that I thought people would be interested in. I wish I did. I would say this last story was the one I think I'd had, not that we knew the origination of certainly the writing and what all that was about, but the fact that I still connected to the person who had purchased it, and it went on. I think that's probably as complete as it was going to be towards at least my end of that story.
Have you ever had an object that you've gotten in and you just felt so uncomfortable with it that you just did not want to sell it, or that you just thought this is just not going to sell because of what's going on with it, or what I'm feeling off of it, or others have felt off of it?
Well, absolutely the desk. Absolutely the desk, because it was just that thing went from $695 to $495 to $390. You know, there was a sale on that desk. I mean, I made a little money, but at that point it was, that thing's got to go. And the thing is too, kind of squaring back to, you know, online sales and that, and talking to dealers, most anybody, this isn't about, oh, I can get more money for this. This thing needs to leave. I need to sell this, and hopefully, you know, I won't get a bad review or someone complained about it. So most people, and honestly, maybe that's part of it is fear. But the other thing, I think it's just basically business. You know, you don't want a bad review. You want your customers to be, you know, happy. And talk about selling somebody a lemon. You know, this isn't like a, you know, some old beat up car. Think about it, particularly with the desk, the husband was like, you know, have we brought something into the house now? You know, this is like an infestation, you know, and that's not, how could that be good? You know, so I think takes a certain person to like adopt that, that dog that nobody wants, you know, I think it's more that.
Has there ever been a situation where you or someone else has been with an object, taken an object into their possession and maybe even gotten rid of the object, but it seems that something connected to that object released itself from that and then attached itself onto you or another object, another thing within your circle of possessions?
I think sometimes when if items come from a situation of violence or something extremely sad, I know dealers have talked about that. It almost makes the pieces unsaleable for some reason. That they just, no matter how cool it is or how well priced it is or even how rare it is, like, what is it about that? And it'll be like, the one I can think of was, there was things that came from a home where there had been a suicide. And in the closet. And there were, you know, clothes in the closet and some really great vintage clothes. None of it would sell. I know a lot of vintage clothing dealers. So again, I think there can be this residual, I don't want to call it bad, I'll just call it like a kind of a negative energy somehow connected to the situation. You know, and I think there's also a flip on that. I think when there's people just pass naturally and they were happy and it was just their time and all that, and they were, people just would tell you how wonderful that person was. Their items fly out the door. not literally. but I get a kick out of it because I know where these things came from. And I know, sometimes I actually knew the person who had passed. And which is why the family would contact me to begin with. And it's like that goodness just continues. And you're selling it to somebody who's so cool, and they're going like, this is great. This item's going on. So I know you might want to be, you know, there's the dark and the light, but there's a lot of light out there. And I try to, in this business, embrace that because of all these endings and how sad things can be.
Let's say you have an object that's in your store, or that someone saw online that they want, and you know that there is something attached to this object, good, bad, what have you. It's just something. There's something going on there beyond just the candlestick that it is, or whatever it may be. Do you share that information with the potential buyer? Or is it just kind of like, well, maybe they'll find it, maybe they won't? Because there's many times I think people never pick up on these things because maybe they don't have the sensitivity level to do so. And maybe whatever is there is not strong enough to reveal itself to every single person if they're not on that sensitivity spectrum.
No. well, and again, I think that goes back to the, you know, the eBay and the haunted dolls and all that stuff. You know, they're using that as a sales tactic and a tool, and you know, it should therefore be worth 50% more because, you know, it crawls under your bed at night. You know, as I said, or said any number of people, you know, I'm not guaranteeing it's haunted. You know, it kind of goes the flip of it. Then they kind of expect it, you know, to be. I do hear in the store before, when you were asking about physical brick and mortar antique stores, you know, I've had a couple of strange things occur to me, but I've heard more from customers who, and this is, we have a 1939 building. Used to be an old furniture store on two levels. It's like 20,000 square feet. And the upstairs are all these furniture showrooms. And this isn't some like dusty old antique store. It's a very modern kind of department store. People go online and check it out. See what it looks like. So in some ways, you think that would be like the least likely place to have these incidences. People tell me, especially girls, say that someone's watching them, someone's following them. They thought they saw someone in a mirror. I've had a lot of that. And I've had employees that said been with me for years, nothing's happened, and then something happens. And they'll go, last night when I was closing, which is generally when something happens. But it kind of makes sense because this is a really big place, and the volume of merchandise we have coming in every day, and a lot of furniture, and I think furniture can be very residual. So, and I can't say, you know, oh, I've heard about, you know, a haunted necklace or a haunted ring or something. No, I've not heard anything like that. But the number of people who ask if other people have seen anything or heard anything upstairs. So there's that feedback, you know, that I get. And the same thing, I say, well, I can't. I'm relating it to them as I'm relating it to you. Other people have said that too. I don't know.
Kind of on that same note, have you ever had an object, or are there any items that you get in and you say, you know what, I'm not going to sell this. If I had not known the story behind it, I would probably sell it. But now I know what the story is. I have never experienced anything with it, but there's a good chance that there could be something not so good attached to it that you say, I'm just not going to put this out there. Does that ever happen?
Well, yeah, I'm going to answer it this way. In that, here's where I'm going to knock the living. that you know, not everybody's sweet and wonderful, let's be honest. That, you know, there's been any number of occasions where there's someone who's purchased something and they were just very difficult, very, very difficult. And they ended up buying it anyway, and they got what they wanted, and you're like, oh, glad that's over with. And then they bring it back. Invariably, and many dealers will say this as well, and again, talk about this negative energy, you can't sell that piece. It's done. It's over. It's almost as if, because there was this big argument about whatever, and it's not necessarily even price. It could be, you know, why isn't this in better condition? Well, it is. This is the condition it's in. We're sold as is, as found, right? You knew that when you bought it, you know, whatever. There's such a negativity that people can, I think, I mean, what we're talking about earlier, can impress on something, just as there could be like a positive life force. I think there's absolutely this negative thing. I end up donating. I just donate the stuff. And that's happened on any number of objects. It just, there's just some, talk about karma. So now, you know, that's more of a retail story than a ghost story, but it's an honest one.
It makes me wonder if sometimes the item gets back out there eventually, somehow someone takes it in. Does the energy that was on it that was not allowing it to sell it and just not making it go anywhere, is that expunged? And then the new energy of someone who loved it, does that replace it and then suddenly make it a sellable object again?
I kind of always think of these things as very much being sponge-like.
Yeah.
You know, and we are sponge-like. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're with people and you know, you go out and they're happy people and you're having a good time, you're having a good time. You go out with a couple, you know, Debbie Downers, mm-hmm. and you're ready to go home and, you know, shoot yourself.
Sure.
So it's just, and I think objects in their own way, they absorb that. But in that same way, can they bounce back? I think they can. I think if they're purchased and loved. My theme is, you know, we are all our things. You know, we are defined by what we collect. And putting that out there, I think items can be rehabilitated. I think it's your point. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good point. I think that's pretty spot on.
One more question I want to ask, because we hear about this, and this is something I would never do, but I know there are some people out there who do have this interest in acquiring haunted objects. It's like any sort of collection, it's something some people want. And if someone is out there who wants to get a haunted object, obviously you can never quite guarantee such a thing, but if you wanted to increase their odds, if they wanted to increase their odds of picking something out at an antique store, what item would you tell them to try and get that would maybe have a higher percentage chance of having something attached to it?
I only, again, because I've seen this and heard this through many others, books seem to have that. And I would tell people this. It'd be, on one hand, you could say, you know, okay, you know, was it, you know, an educated consumer is your best customer, you know, know your furrier, I think that was the expression. So, you know, you're trying to buy from a reputable dealer if you're really looking for something like that. But boy, I think you're going to probably kiss a lot of toads along the way. I would do this. And this is just me. I'm a bit of a book person anyway. But you know, first off, I mean, antique stores, yeah, absolutely. But, you know, thrifting is probably good in that, because, and I would say estate sales, but it gets a little tricky there because it's very competitive and you really can't do it. Just try to be as open and receptive as possible. Like, open up your palms, have your palms open. Don't have any clenched fists. Be receptive and just look and just feel and try to relax and let the object find you. I think that works more often than the other way around. Something will speak to you. That expression, you know, it spoke to me, it talked to me. Well, it didn't literally, but they do. And I think if nothing else, you can kind of find a different part of yourself that we all have. We absolutely all have this. But again, being a little more intuitive, being a little more empathic, being kinder, which we can all use that these last couple months, and open yourself up to these things. I think in a situation, especially quiet, that's why I think a thrift store might be a good place to do it, or in a quiet antique store. estate sales get very competitive about finding things. It's hard to relax. There's all this energy of like somebody else is going to come along and grab the item while you're standing there, you know. So if you can get into that, I would say if you really want to try to find something, let the item find you.
You can find out more about Duane Scott Kearney's book and what he does on his website, sellingdeadpeoplesthings.com. The link is also on our website at thegravetalks.com. That's going to wrap up today's episode of The Grave Talks. If you like our show, let your friends know that we exist. Please give us some positive reviews on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to our show. And share it on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Reddit, whatever it may be. Letting other folks know about our program helps us tremendously and helps us create a better show for you. So please do share and let other folks know about us. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for listening.